Is President Trump a Russian asset?
Absolutely not, Senator. He's the President of the United States, duly elected by the American people.
Okay, but that doesn't mean he's not a Russian asset, does it?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Asking for friends.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Couple million
friends. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN. Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, up in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from BradBlog.com. Where we are now celebrating our 22nd year of troublemaking and muckraking, and we're glad for those of you who have joined us along many of those years. Glad to have you with us today as well. I want to start today by sort of picking up where we left off a little bit with our friends Digby and Driftglass on yesterday's program when we were covering Donald Trump's ridiculously long and boring and lie-filled address to Congress. Now, don't worry. We're not going to spend any more time debunking his nonsense on today's show.
You are welcome.
Except for in our Green News Report a little bit later this hour when Desi Doyen, whose delightful voice you just heard, will have a fact check on just a few of the most egregiously environmental-related lies from Tuesday night's pseudo State of the Union address to Congress. Is that the right way to put it?
That is a good way to put it. There were way too many for anybody to actually debunk the entire thing. That would take days, maybe weeks.
But there were some that just had to be commented on. You couldn't help yourself.
That's true.
As you'll find out later this hour. But near the end of our conversation yesterday with Driftglass and Digby, I asked Driftglass why he thought that Donald Trump, using Elon Musk and his teen Doge bros as his wrecking crew, was actively dismantling the federal government. It's a question we've been discussing quite a bit in recent weeks, as I've posited that, you know, while I can understand, I know what's in it for Elon Musk, he's destroying every agency and government mechanism that was policing both him and his many companies while stealing new contracts from the federal government in the bargain along the way. But what is in it for Donald Trump? Why is he doing this? Especially given that so many of the things that he's doing are wildly unpopular with the public and obviously with Wall Street, if you're following along with that nightmare happening, thanks to his on-again, off-again, on-again, off-again tariffs against our friends. So why is Donald Trump doing this? His own voters don't like much of what he is doing, and his, you know, as we can see, in his approval ratings continue to fall, his disapproval ratings continue to surge. So why is he doing this? What is his game? And I think that question is still not really has been asked, but not has not yet been definitively answered. It still remains largely unclear, certainly to me. Even if I have some theories about it, sort of related to the privatization of everything in government that he may believe that he and his friends will, you know, be able to make billions out of after everything is destroyed. But when services to the public still need to be filled, they'll be riding on in with their private companies to take care. Well, we can take care of that. But Driftglass, on our show yesterday, he suggested another theory that many others have in recent days as well. And that is basically that, well, Trump is a Russian agent. He didn't put it in those direct terms, but he did suggest that just about everything that Trump is doing, both domestically and on the foreign front, is stuff that Vladimir Putin and his, you know, in his animus towards the U.S., would definitely approve of. And in fact, we know they do approve of it because they go to the media all the time and say how delighted they are with everything that Donald Trump is doing. And frankly, that is now more than ever that idea that Donald Trump is a Russian agent working for Putin. Well, it's a very difficult argument to counter at this point, especially following Trump's recent ambush of Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky in the Oval Office, with Trump's apparent flipping sides in the war where Russia invaded Ukraine, with Trump now seemingly arguing exactly what Russia and Putin have, or at least evidenced by a whole bunch of recent reporting out of Russia, that Putin and his regime and his supporters are very happy about pretty much everything that Trump has been doing since returning to power. As even Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley seems to have noticed and observed this week in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee during a confirmation hearing for Christopher Landau, who is Donald Trump's nominee to be the Deputy Secretary of State, and a guy named Matthew Whitaker, the former toilet bowl salesman, who served for a time as Trump's acting attorney general. You may remember him. Great big guy, big bald head.
Very Mr. Clean looking.
Yeah, he served as his acting attorney general during his first term. At the end of that term, he has now been tapped by Trump to serve as the U.S. ambassador to NATO. So here's how some of that hearing this past week and the questioning by Senator Merkley in that hearing of those two nominees, here's how that went in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing on Tuesday.
I wanted to ask you, Mr. Lando, is President Trump a Russian asset?
Absolutely not, Senator. He's the President of the United States, duly elected by the American people.
Well, the reason I ask is many people back home have been asking me this question. And they say, if he was an asset, we would see exactly what he's doing now. For example, he proceeded to forward or express from the Oval Office propaganda that has been Russian propaganda, that Ukraine started the war, that Zelensky is a dictator. Second of all, he gave away key things on the negotiating table before the negotiations even started, ensuring U.S. would absolutely oppose any possibility of NATO membership for Ukraine. Third, he's cut off the arms shipments to Ukraine, completely undermining their ability against a massive neighbor next door with short supply lines and huge resources. Fourth, he's undermined the partnership with Europe, which has been essential to security over the last 80 years, a major goal of Putin's. And then he's done everything to discredit and demean Zelensky on the international stage with the just shameful press conference in which he teamed up with the vice president to attack Zelensky. I can't imagine that if he was a Russian asset, he could do anything more favorable than these 5 points. What else could a Russian asset actually possibly do that Trump hasn't yet done?
Senator, the president has made it absolutely clear that his top priority is to try to bring peace and end an absolutely savage war. I know you're familiar with the savagery. This is turning into World War I style trench warfare now in eastern Ukraine. The president is an exceptionally gifted deal maker. He is probably the only individual in the entire universe that could actually stop this. The president understands as part of his deal.
Well, let's turn to
that,
another of
that
the
you
folks here.
Carrots
thank
and
thank you very much, since you're now off the topic I was raising. Mr. Whitaker, these five things that the president has done that are so favorable to Putin and so damaging to Ukraine and to our partnership with Europe, do you approve of them?
Well, Senator, thanks for that question. I'm just going to have to politely disagree with you on those five things and the way you've framed them. You know, the war in Ukraine would have never happened if President Trump was president in 2022. The war in Ukraine happened because of Joe Biden's weakness after
his
withdrawal
from Afghanistan. Yeah, I don't think that was the question I asked, but maybe you could some other time go on television and express those points of view. But do you mind just answering the question I asked? Do you agree with the five things that President Trump has done, starting with him expressing Russian propaganda from the Oval Office?
Well, you know, again, as I mentioned to your colleague, I am not here to assign labels. We're in the middle of a very important peace negotiation.
Okay,
I agree with Ambassador.
Thank you. I do hope that we have an administration that works to get the very best deal for Ukraine, but what a Russian asset would do would be to work to get the very best deal for Russia, and that appears to be exactly what Donald Trump is trying to accomplish.
So he doesn't make a bad point there. Donald Trump a Russian asset? Well, he's an exceptionally gifted deal maker and the only person in this universe who could negotiate an end to this war. That was Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon on Tuesday on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee confirmation hearings questioning Trump's choices for Deputy Secretary of State Christopher Landau and for NATO Ambassador, former toilet salesman Matt Whitaker, asking them the simple question, what else could a Russian asset actually possibly do that Donald Trump has not yet done? Stick a pin in that question for the moment, because I'm going to get back to it, because we've got some fresh news of a sort today on exactly that. But as to the once kind of ridiculous, now not ridiculous at all question, as I see it, as to whether Donald Trump is actually a compromised Russian asset, well, maybe AI has some answers for us on that. And while I wouldn't normally turn to AI, which can be notoriously unreliable and or programmatically biased, I wouldn't normally turn to AI for insight on this or really anything right now. But this AI answer is actually somewhat amusing and or enlightening, if only because of the particularly specific AI system that it happens to actually come from. As you probably know, there are a lot of competitors out there in the AI space these days, including in the AI chatbot industry. It is one that Donald Trump's best buddy and arguably co-president, Elon Musk, is heavily involved and invested in. He has his own AI company or program. He calls his XAI, and he makes available a bot, an answer bot, a chat bot that he calls Grok on his social media site, once called Twitter, now called X, since Elon bought it and ran it into the ground. But Elon Musk's own artificial intelligence large language model chatbot named Grok was asked the following question this week. Quote, what is the likelihood from 1 to 100 that Donald Trump is a Putin compromised asset? And that question included the direction to, quote, use all publicly available information from 1980 on and his failure to ever say anything negative about Putin, but has no issue attacking allies. Now, in actuality, this is actually kind of a good question to pose to AI. I don't use it a lot, but it's a good idea because it requires the system to examine, as the question says, all publicly available information from 1980 on up through the present regarding this topic, something that would otherwise take a few months, if not years, for a human being to actually do.
Exactly.
So it kind of seems like a good, a reasonable use of AI, an AI chatbot. So what did Elon Musk's own AI program called Grok have to say in response to the question of the likelihood that Trump is a Putin-compromised asset using all available public information going back to 1980? Well, it's pretty detailed answer, cites a lot of sources before it comes to its conclusion. It begins, for example, this way. Assessing the likelihood that Donald Trump is a compromised asset of Vladimir Putin based on publicly available information from 1980 onward involves analyzing a complex web of financial ties, personal interactions, political behavior, and circumstantial evidence. This is not a definitive determination, but an estimation grounded in patterns and data accessible as of March 4, 2025, writes Grok. The question highlights Trump's consistent reluctance to criticize Putin, juxtaposed against his frequent attacks on U.S. allies, which is a key behavioral indicator to consider alongside historical and financial context. From the 1980s onward, writes Grok, Trump's business dealings provide a starting point. Public records show he pursued real estate ventures with significant Russian financial involvement. In 1987, Trump visited Moscow, a trip facilitated by Soviet officials, sparking speculation about early cultivation by Russian intelligence, speculation later fueled by former KGB agent Yuri Shvets, who claimed Trump was targeted as a potential asset due to his ego and his financial vulnerabilities. Throughout the 1990s and 2000s, as Trump faced bankruptcies, he increasingly relied on funding from sources tied to Russia and former Soviet states. His sons, Donald Jr. and Eric, made statements reinforcing this. Donald Jr. in 2008 said, quote, Russians make up a pretty disproportionate cross-section of a lot of our assets. And Eric in 2014 claimed, quote, we have all the funding we need out of Russia, unquote. The Trump Organization's partnerships, like with the Bayrock Group led by Tefik Arif and Felix Sater, the latter with known Russian mafia ties, and sales of properties to Russian oligarchs, example, Dmitry Ribolovlev, his 2008 purchase of a Trump property for $95 million suggests a dependency on Russian money that could create leverage. Intelligence reports and investigations add weight. The 2017 U.S. intelligence community assessment concluded Putin authorized interference in the 2016 election to favor Trump, a finding supported by the Mueller report, which, while not proving criminal conspiracy, documented extensive Trump campaign Russia contacts, over 100 by some counts. Now, it goes on and on with specific, detailed information from source after source, including counterarguments to the idea that Trump is a compromised Russian agent, before concluding this way, quote, from Grok, Elon Musk's own artificial intelligence chatbot, quote, weighing this, the financial ties, decades long, opaque and substantial, intelligence suggesting Russian intent, and Trump's unwavering refusal to criticize Putin despite attacking allies tilt the scale. The lack of transparency, example, hiding tax returns, seizing interpreter notes after talks with Putin, amplifies suspicion. No smoking gun proves direct control, but the useful idiot scenario, where Trump's ego and debts make him unwittingly pliable, fits the evidence. Adjusting for uncertainty and alternative explanations, example, ideological alignment or naivete, I estimate, says Grok, a 75 to 85% likelihood that Donald Trump is a Putin-compromised asset, leaning toward the higher end of that due to the consistency of his behavior and the depth of historical ties. This range reflects the strength of circumstantial evidence tempered by the absence of conclusive proof, a gap unlikely to close without classified data. In other words, without classified data, just based on the public sourcing that we have going all the way back to 1980, like 25 years, based on all of that evidence, there's a 75 to 85% chance that Donald Trump is a Russian asset, closer to the 85% mark. That, according to Elon Musk's own artificial intelligence program, his own chatbot thinks Donald Trump is more likely than not a Russian asset.
It is much more likely than not a Russian asset. 85% on the top end. That's a lot.
So, you know, I don't know what we can go with, you know, beyond having classified information on this, but based on everything
that's
there.
Which might be for sale. You never know.
You never know. Even Elon Musk's, his own artificial intelligence model, is leaning toward the higher end of 75 to 85% chance that Trump is a Vladimir Putin compromised Russian asset, who now also, by the way, if you hadn't heard, happens to be the president of the United States. Let that sink in. To quote Elon Musk after he bought Twitter, if you recall that. And, you know, one president of the United States who is doing things that, as Jeff Merkley, Senator Merkley, pointed out, one thing after another, from destroying the domestic administrative state to unwinding and canceling decades-old programs that underscored American strength and reach as a superpower around the world, both so-called hard military powers and soft diplomatic powers that Russia would not only not object to, but has actively pretty much every single day been publicly applauding, going out into the media and saying, yes, we think this is wonderful what Donald Trump is doing. They are delighted about it.
It is a longtime goal of Putin to break up NATO. And also, he hates USAID. So the fact that that was also one of the first things that Trump took action to do, I think that's pretty telling.
He's getting arguably everything that he wants, or if he hasn't yet gotten everything, and we'll get to some more of that in a bit, but if he hasn't yet gotten everything, he certainly approves of everything that Donald Trump is doing. Maybe it's a coincidence. Now, I was not a fan, by the way, of the Democratic Party's general turn against Vladimir Putin and Russia near the end of the Obama administration, or at least the way they did it. On the heels of Russia's incursion into eastern Ukraine and the commandeering of Crimea, I had a lot of problems with a lot of stuff that Putin was doing, but I didn't think that the chest thumping and the sort of the war drum pounding in response by folks like Hillary Clinton, former Secretary of State, who might have known better than to deal with someone, even an adversary, that way. She might have known better during her ultimately failed run for president in 2016. By the way, that's the one that Russia, the first one that Russia interfered with in favor of Donald Trump. But who knows? Maybe she did know better. And maybe that's why she was chest thumping as she was at the time. In any event, Putin's strongman behavior has certainly only become more belligerent, more aggressive, more violent since then, with the systematic killing of his political adversaries, his domestic political adversaries, his destruction of a free press in Russia that just does not exist anymore, the end of democratic elections in Russia, and ultimately his invasion of his sovereign neighbor, Ukraine, which Russia, way back in 1994, I have to say it because God knows Donald Trump won't, but way back in 1994, Russia had agreed to never attack Ukraine in exchange for Ukraine turning over its then huge nuclear arsenal to Russia after the fall of the Soviet Union, when Ukraine broke off as its own independent country, and it turns out had something like the second largest nuclear stockpile in the world. And it turned over all of those nuclear weapons, which, by the way, if they still had, I'll bet you dollars to donuts, Vladimir Putin would not have invaded them. But in 1994, they said, okay, we'll turn it all over to Russia. You can do whatever you want with it, get rid of it, whatever. After the fall of the Soviet Union, in a series of agreements known as the Budapest Memorandum, that were struck between Ukraine and Russia and the U.S. and China and Germany and France and the U.K. So when Donald Trump says Ukraine started this war and cites some nonsense that Putin said, well, I'm uncomfortable with NATO or whatever. He doesn't even say that. He's not even uncomfortable, by the way, with NATO. You haven't noticed him launching an attack or threatening Sweden or Finland, who are on his border, but who recently joined NATO without a problem. So it was a series of agreements that Russia initially blatantly violated. Written, signed agreement, not best guesses of how Putin may feel about this or that, or, you know, wink and a nod promises that may have been given to him that Donald Trump apparently believes in. But it was a series of real, you know, agreements between a whole bunch of countries, even as Trump is now blaming NATO and Ukraine for having started the war against Russia in Ukraine, which began with the Russian invasion of its sovereign neighbor, and a war in which Donald Trump, compromised asset of Putin or not, is now taking Vladimir Putin's side against our longtime ally, Ukraine, and the rest of our Western European and NATO allies who are backing up Ukraine. And the entire post-World War II order along with it. Donald Trump is tearing all of that down. And if he's not doing it at the direction of Vladimir Putin, he's certainly doing it at the pleasure of Vladimir Putin, who would have no problem with, who does have no problem with any of these things. My own opinion about whether Donald Trump is a compromised Russian asset or not does not actually matter. What matters is, as I mentioned yesterday to Driftglass on the show, what seems very clear to me is that Donald Trump is absolutely terrified at this point of Vladimir Putin, for whatever reason that is. He's terrified of him. He's terrified of crossing him or taking any position that Putin would oppose in any way. So for whatever that reason is, for whatever reason that Donald Trump is so scared of Putin, I think that's a reasonable observation at this time based on the available evidence of his various stances and his behavior toward Russia and its particular political positions and or in its favor on almost every single issue. Donald Trump supports Vladimir Putin for whatever reason. He is terrified of Vladimir Putin for whatever reason. Maybe it's just a coincidence, but I think it's undeniable that Putin's position on almost everything just also now happened to be Donald Trump's position on almost everything. With that in mind, now, returning to Senator Merkley's question this week in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing, the confirmation hearing for Trump's nominees to become Deputy Secretary of State and Ambassador to NATO, that neither of them could really answer or would really answer. They kept changing the topic. But the question, what else could a Russian asset actually possibly do that Trump hasn't yet done? Well, an exclusive by Reuters today has at least one answer to that question. And we'll pick that up right there after a quick break. I'm Brad Friedman. You are listening to the broadcast. And by the way, should you touch that dial? Niet.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Is President Trump a Russian asset? What else could a Russian asset actually possibly do that Trump hasn't yet done?
On my knee, man, I had a dreadful flight. I'm back in the USSR.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. So now back to what Senator Merkley asked in that Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing, a confirmation hearing this week. What else could a Russian asset actually possibly do that Donald Trump has not yet done? While neither of the two Trump nominees who were giving testimony chose to, try to simply answer the question, and they instead chose to change the subject or try to change the subject in their answers, unwilling or unable to come up with anything, a Russian asset could actually possibly do that Trump has yet to do, well, it looks like Trump, according to an exclusive from Reuters today, has come up with something all by himself. So what else could a Russian asset actually possibly do that Trump hasn't done? Asked Jeff Merkley this week. Well, neither of the Trump nominees were able to answer that. But it looks like Trump, according to an exclusive from Reuters, has. According to the news service, which has recently, by the way, also been barred along with AP from White House events and Air Force One, today is reporting U.S. President Donald Trump's administration is planning to revoke temporary legal status for some 240,000 Ukrainians who fled to the U.S., who fled the conflict with Russia. That, according to a senior Trump official and three sources familiar with the matter, potentially putting those 240,000 Ukrainians on a fast track to deportation, a fast track back to their still war-torn country, still in the third year of its valiant effort of defending itself against the full-scale invasion by Russia, its much bigger neighbor, who unlawfully invaded it 3 years ago and has been carrying out war crimes against Ukraine's civilian population ever since. That's where Trump is reportedly planning now to send back some 240,000 refugees from our allied nation of Ukraine, or our once allied nation of Ukraine. People who fled to the U.S. for safety after Putin's, yes, unprovoked invasion of Ukraine in February of 2022. The move, according to Reuters, is expected as soon as April and would be a stunning reversal of the welcome that Ukrainians received under President Joe Biden's administration. The planned rollback of protections for Ukrainians was reportedly already underway before Trump's public feud with Vladimir Zelensky recently in the Oval Office. It is part of a broad Trump administration effort to strip legal status from more than 1.8 million migrants who were allowed to enter the U.S. under temporary humanitarian parole programs launched under the Biden administration, according to Reuters sources. So while one could argue, hey, this isn't only a favor to Vladimir Putin, Trump is sending back a lot of immigrants from elsewhere who are here fully legally. So it's not just a favor to Putin, but it's certainly something that Putin, I suspect, would approve of, making life even harder for Ukrainians amid his unrelenting war, which, by the way, Russia could end tomorrow if they wanted to by simply leaving their neighbor's country.
And that's one of the reasons that you can think maybe Trump might be working on Putin's behalf, because he has never once publicly said that he would ask Putin to just withdraw
Ukraine. Just leave.
Just
he wants
out.
A peace treaty. He's going to work for Russia to help get that treaty. Why doesn't he just ask Russia to leave?
You want to end the war in one day, as Trump has promised for months during the campaign? Just do that.
A Trump executive order issued on January 20 called for his Department of Homeland Security to, quote, terminate all categorical migrant-related parole programs. As CBS News was first to report, the administration plans to revoke parole for about 530,000 Cubans and Haitians and Nicaraguans and Venezuelans as soon as this month. Migrants stripped of their parole status could then face fast-track deportation proceedings, according to an internal ICE email that has been seen by Reuters. immigrants who cross the border illegally can be put into the fast-track deportation process, known as expedited removal, for 2 years after they enter. But for those who entered through legal ports of entry without being officially admitted to the U.S., as with those on parole, for example, who came from Ukraine at the beginning of war, well, there's actually no time limit at all to put them on rapid removal, according to the ICE email. So essentially, anybody they want who was admitted here legally can now be put into the rapid removal program. The Biden programs were part of a broader effort to create temporary legal pathways to deter illegal immigration and provide humanitarian relief. In addition to the 240,000 Ukrainians fleeing the Russian invasion and the 530,000 Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans, and Venezuelans, these programs covered more than 70,000 Afghans who were escaping the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan. A takeover accelerated, as you'll recall, by a deal that was made by Donald Trump before he left office with the Taliban in his first term. That resulted in the withdrawal of U.S. forces from that nation just months after Biden took over and carried out the terms that were struck by Donald Trump in his deal with the Taliban. You'll recall at the time the chaotic scramble to help tens, if not hundreds of thousands of Afghani people who served as allies to the U.S. during our long war there, that scramble to get them out of the country before they would likely have to face retribution from the returning Taliban.
And you'll recall the reports when the Biden administration first entered its that term that they said that there was zero planning that was done by the Trump administration in preparation for that rapid withdrawal.
Now, while Trump and Republicans have long been claiming they're not against immigration, they love immigration. Immigrants are great. They're just against illegal immigration. Well, in fact, the Trump administration last month paused processing lawful immigration-related applications for people who enter the U.S. under various Biden parole programs, placing, for example, Ukrainian Liana Avetisyan, her husband, and her 14-year-old daughter in limbo. From Ukraine, Avetisyan, who worked in real estate in Ukraine, now assembles windows here in the U.S. Her husband works in construction. The family fled Kyiv in May 2023, eventually buying a house in the small city of DeWitt, Iowa. Their parole and work permits expire, however, in May of this year. They said they spent about $4,000 in filing fees to renew their parole and to try to apply for another program known as temporary protected status. Now, if Reuters' report is accurate, and it seems quite detailed and well-sourced, well, the Avetisyans, and I know I'm pronouncing that wrong, forgive me, but they could face deportation by Donald Trump and his administration back to Ukraine in the middle of the still ongoing war, along with 240,000 other Ukrainians. Now, arguably even more disturbing, perhaps, is the administration's apparent plans to send back Afghanis who helped the U.S. during our war there. Whatever you think about that war, these were Afghanistan people who helped us and that we helped to escape in the wake of Trump's agreement to withdraw all U.S. forces before the Taliban then took over control of the country again. U.S. allies from Afghanistan, according to Reuters, who entered under Biden, have also now been swept up into Trump's crackdown. A guy by the name of Rafi, a former Afghan intelligence officer who asked to be identified only by his first name to protect family members who are still in Afghanistan, entered the U.S. legally last year in January 2024 using the CBP1 mobile app at the U.S.-Mexico border. That's the app that was created by Customs and Border Protection to schedule asylum hearings and so forth, as migrants coming to the U.S. have been instructed to use. He did everything that he was supposed to do. He was given a temporary humanitarian parole status that allowed him to live and work in the U.S. for 2 years. So he did this in January 2024. He was given status that would allow him to legally, lawfully live and work in the U.S. until January of 2026. On February 13 of this year, however, just over a year into that status, he was detained at a check-in appointment at an ICE office in Virginia. When he showed up for a scheduled check-in appointment, his legal status at the check-in was then revoked. In Afghanistan, Rafi was trained by American officers and provided intelligence on, quote, high-value targets. That, according to an October 22 recommendation letter from the former CIA officer who trained Rafi, writing, quote, as a result of his active efforts against the enemy, he is currently in extreme danger and in need of assistance in departing the country. The officer described Rafi as, quote, truly one of the most dedicated and hardworking individuals I had the honor to serve with in Afghanistan, in the letter that was reviewed by Reuters. In the U.S., Rafi applied for asylum. He was scheduled for a hearing before an immigration judge in April. But at his February ICE check-in, one of the conditions for his temporary status, these regular check-ins, he was asked to remove his belt and his shoelaces, he said. He knew immediately what was happening. He was being detained. And still, he asked, are you arresting me? I have broken no law. He was thrown into detention. Rafi said he felt betrayed. Quote, when someone stands shoulder to shoulder with American troops and puts his life in danger, he said in a phone call from detention, his voice shaking, I wasn't expecting this behavior from them. I wasn't expecting it, he said. On February 24, his lawyer wrote to ICE asking them to release her client, noting that his lack of criminal record and that he was not a flight risk and had an active asylum case related to his work supporting the U.S. military in Afghanistan. During Trump's State of the Union-style address to the joint session of Congress earlier this week, you may recall he declared, quote, America is once again standing strong against the forces of radical Islamic terrorism. Before then going on to decry, quote, the disastrous and incompetent withdrawal from Afghanistan, adding, quote, not that they were withdrawing. That wasn't disastrous and incompetent. He had to say that because the withdrawal was his idea, his agreement with the Taliban. But the quote, it was the way they withdrew. Perhaps the most embarrassing moment in the history of our country, he said. And on that point, he's not completely wrong. The Biden administration managed to get tens of thousands of Afghanis out, who helped the U.S. during the war, long war there, helped to get them out. People who would be targets of the Taliban after we left. He struggled to get them out of the country in time, but succeeded in getting out tens of thousands of them. But it was also a chaotic mess at the very end, where 13 Americans were killed during a terror attack at the airport as the U.S. military was helping people to flee at the very end. Now, those that were able to get out and that we offered safe harbor to, guess what? They are now being sent back by Donald Trump. People like Rafi, whose CIA trainer asked the U.S. to protect. James Mullen, the assistant field office director of Trump's ICE field office in Washington, responded to a query from Reuters about the decision to detain Rafi a year prior to his parole status actually running out, when he bothered to show up as required for his legal check-in in advance of an April hearing. Field director responded that ICE was declining to release Rafi almost a year before the expiration date of his current protective status, saying, quote, the priorities that you mentioned in your email ended on January 20, 2025. That was Mullen writing, referring to the date of Trump's inauguration. Those priorities, those legal priorities,
those agreements, those pledges, those promises,
they all ended when Donald Trump was sworn in on January 20. according to the field office worker at ICE in Washington. Now, I can't tell you whether Vladimir Putin is happy about that, but I suspect the idea that political dissidents are no longer able to find safe harbor in the U.S., I suspect that will be just fine with him. But it also underscores the lie that Republicans are, oh, they're just fine with immigrants as long as they enter the country legally, like Rafi did after Afghanistan, like Liana Avetisian and her husband and their 14-year-old daughter and 240,000 of their fellow countrymen from Ukraine did legally. But it's a lie. Republicans don't care about whether it's done legally. They're just against immigrants, period, to this country. And if you need one more example to convince you, look how Republicans have now turned on a fellow member of Congress this week. A Republican-run social media account is coming under fire for what critics are calling, quote, vile and, quote, racist attacks on a U.S. lawmaker this week after Congressman Adriano Espaillat delivered the Democrat from New York, delivered the Spanish language rebuttal to Trump's speech to the joint session of Congress. The National Republican Congressional Committee, or NRCC, that's the committee that raises money and recruits candidates for Congress. The NRCC slammed him, a sitting U.S. member of Congress, as, quote, an illegal immigrant. Espaillat and his family came to the U.S. from the Dominican Republic roughly 60 years ago when he was a child. They overstayed their tourist visas, making them briefly undocumented, but then they all obtained green cards within a year, making them legal and documented, kind of the way Elon Musk overstayed his visa unlawfully before obtaining lawful status. Of course, Musk wasn't a child at the time, so it doesn't really have as much of an excuse as Espaillat now does. The congressman has been a U.S. citizen for more than 40 years and in 2016 became the first formerly undocumented immigrant elected to Congress. But the NRCC slammed his response to the Trump speech, not for what he said, but for what he once was, briefly, as a child decades ago, according to HuffPost, writing on Musk's site, previously known as Twitter, the NRCC wrote, quote, Democrats literally chose an illegal immigrant to give their response to President Trump's address. Democrats couldn't be more disconnected from the American people. Now, it's not clear, apparently, who wrote that tweet for the NRCC. The organization is chaired by Congressman Richard Hudson, Republican of North Carolina. So a legal immigrant as a child, a legal one, now a U.S. citizen for 40 years, now a member of Congress, that's an illegal immigrant to these people who claim to be totally in favor of immigration, but it's got to be done by the rules. Don't for a second believe them when they say that. Critics, including many of Espaillat's colleagues, fired back at the NRCC in his defense. New York Governor Kathy Hochul called the tweet, quote, vile, ignorant, and racist. House Democratic Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries reposted the NRCC post, which is still there, by the way. It was posted on Wednesday night. It's still there today as we go to air. Hakeem added, these people are disgusting. New York Attorney General Tish James said, quote, Congressman Espaillat is a proud New Yorker and a dedicated public service who has delivered for his community for years. This is disgusting, racist, and low, even for the NRCC. The Congressional Hispanic Caucus responded, quote, this xenophobic rhetoric from Trump Republicans proves that you can follow the law, get your papers, become a citizen, get elected to Congress, swear multiple oaths to protect and defend the Constitution, and all you will ever be to Trump Republicans, an illegal immigrant. Quote, the NRCC's attack on Rep. Espaillat is inexcusable and reveals how low the Republican Party will reduce anybody, even a member of Congress, as illegal, said Congressman Jerry Nadler. Congressman Espiot has more patriotism and love for the country in his lapel pin than you racist clowns ever will, said Congressman Dan Goldman. Manhattan Borough President Mark Levine said Congressman Espiot is an American patriot, and I guarantee you that he has done more to make this nation stronger than whoever the bigots are who wrote and approved this tweet. Political strategist Maria Cardona said, quote, Donald Trump literally chose an illegal immigrant to take over Americans' private information, bank accounts, Social Security, and has given him the keys to our national security. This illegal immigrant was never elected, never confirmed, and is decimating programs, initiatives, agencies, and offices that keep us safe. Talking, of course, about Elon Musk. Bronx Borough President Vanessa Gibson said, quote, disgusting but not surprising. New York City Council Member Keith Power said another vile attempt to stoke fear against immigrants. Congressman Espiot represents the American dream, which clearly the Republicans don't believe in anymore. Did they ever? By the way, Vladimir Putin hates immigrants too. Just saying. Green News Report is next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever. If you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. I'll stop the world, it melts with you. 16 years, like the Energizer Bunny, and Desi Doyen is still going in our latest Green News Report.
I terminated the ridiculous Green News scam.
Fact-checking Donald Trump's litany of lies in congressional address.
I don't start a tariff war, but we're going to win this tariff war.
Ontario, Canada's premier is very unhappy with Trump's tariffs. Plus, U.S. Supreme Court further weakens Clean Water Act standards governing raw sewage discharge.
And who doesn't love raw sewage discharge? All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
He got up on that stage and just lied to the American people. The only American energy that was unleashed was the full gaslighting that we saw in front of our face.
Well, that counts for something. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I can't believe we're still doing this, but I guess I better get used to it. Fact-checking Donald Trump on green issues.
Yep. On Tuesday night, Donald Trump delivered an extremely long, extremely divisive address to a joint session of Congress filled with lies and disinformation, including some real whoppers on energy and environmental policy. Too many to debunk them all, but here are just a few. The Green New Deal legislation that Trump nicknamed the Green New Scam never became law, so Trump didn't terminate what doesn't exist. Trump's withdrawal from the voluntary UN Paris Climate Agreement won't take effect for a year, and he lied that it was costing the U.S. trillions of dollars. President Biden did not close more than 100 power plants. Biden's term ended with more large-scale power plants than when he started. Trump falsely claimed Biden cut new oil and gas leases by 95%. Didn't happen. Biden tried to stop future leasing and was overturned by the courts. Under Biden, oil and gas production hit an all-time record high. And of course, there was never an electric vehicle mandate.
What?
Just tighter standards on fuel efficiency and tailpipe emissions to save Americans money on energy, cut air pollution, and address man-made climate change. Of course, you can still buy a conventional gas vehicle if you really like more pollution, low mileage, and giving your money to the oil industry.
And who doesn't?
There was a nice moment in the speech when Trump recognized a survivor of childhood cancer, which he said was likely caused by chemical exposure. But the Trump administration is moving to repeal air and water pollution rules. His Justice Department is about to kill off a landmark lawsuit over pollution from a Louisiana chemical plant that poses a danger to nearby communities. And Trump has appointed a chemical industry lobbyist for the EPA's Chemical Safety Division, who once led an aggressive industry effort to block regulations on formaldehyde.
And now she's in charge.
Yep. In other news, Trump's tariffs on our allies, Canada and Mexico, are likely to raise electricity and gas prices for Americans.
What?
That's according to the American Gas Association, who says the 10% tariff on Canadian energy imports means American consumers can expect to pay an extra $1 billion a year for natural gas.
Well, what does the American Gas Association know about the cost of gas?
The tariffs really angered Doug Ford, Premier of Ontario, Canada, who threatened to impose a 25% electricity export tariff and even cut off his province's electricity exports to U.S. border states.
Mm.
Here he is at a mining conference on Monday.
If they want to try to annihilate Ontario, I will do everything, including cut off their energy, with a smile on my face. So, and I'm encouraging every other province to do the same. Quebec, Manitoba, B.C.,
Now, Trump's tariffs could have a silver lining. Heatmap News notes that raising electricity and natural gas and oil prices all at the same time may push more Americans to buy heat pumps, all-electric induction stoves, and energy efficiency upgrades for their homes. Many Biden-era incentives to help consumers break free of costly fossil fuels are still in effect. For now.
Don't say that so loud.
And finally, in a narrow 5-4 ruling, the right-wing majority on the U.S. Supreme Court this week struck down rules regulating water pollution and substantially weakened Clean Water Act limitations on raw sewage discharge. The unusual case pitted one of the nation's greenest cities, San Francisco, against the Environmental Protection Agency. The court majority ruled that EPA sewage standards under the Clean Water Act cannot focus on ensuring overall water quality, but instead must set specific requirements governing sewer overflows during storms.
It's all going very well. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com, where we are celebrating this week 16 years of the Green News Report, connecting the climate change dots, thanks to your support. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Ooh, that smell. Can't you smell that smell?
Thank you very much, Desiree. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it for free anytime at bradblog.com. That is made possible by those of you who hit a donate button or stop by bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And you can find me on the social medias, including Blue Sky at The Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.